This is KVNF. You're tuned to Local Motion. I'm Gavin Dahl. This week, we meet Colorado College student Anya Steinberg, who in early April was named a grand prize winner in NPR's Student Podcast Challenge, College Edition, in He's Just 23 Chromosomes. She shares her journey, learning that her biological father, a sperm donor she'd been told was a doctor, was in fact a jazz musician. Plus, Colorado College journalism professor Corey Hutchins talks about the significance of the Grand Junction Sentinel retiring its 40-year-old printing press. That's all coming up this half hour on Local Motion. Stay tuned to KVNF Mountain Grown Community Radio. My first guest is Anya Steinberg, a student at Colorado College, who is now a national champion, at least in the eyes of NPR. Thanks for joining me, Anya.
Hi, great to be here.
So we're going to play your podcast for our listeners in just a moment and then talk about it a bit. Before we do, let me just ask you about yourself. What are you studying at Colorado College and when do you graduate?
I'm actually a senior right now, so I'm coming up on the end of college and I study environmental science and race and ethnic studies. I have a double major.
Wow. And so this podcast, He's Just 23 Chromosomes, is not your first foray into the audio storytelling genre. Can you describe the very cool series you're part of called New Narratives?
Yeah. So I basically am the one woman show at New Narratives. I do this podcast for an organization based out of Minneapolis, and it's called Asian American Organizing Project. And the way I like to describe New Narratives is it's dispatches from Minnesota that highlight the stories of Asian America. So basically just all about Asians.
And is that something that is still in the works? Are there more episodes of that one coming?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I've been working on this since last June, and I come up with episodes about every 3 months or so, depending on how long it takes me. And I'm just coming out with like this semester's cycle of episodes. So I released one last week. There's one going to be coming out in the next week or so. And then there's another one in the works.
How did you hear about the NPR Student Podcast Challenge? And what were your expectations when you submitted your story?
My friend's mom texted it to him and then he sent it to me because he wasn't interested in doing it. But that turned out to be, like, as you probably know, the craziest experience of my lifetime now. My expectations going in were nothing. I didn't think that I was going to win. I thought maybe if I like did a good job, I would get honorable mention because I was like, oh, I've been podcasting for a while now. Like, at least I know how to use the equipment and maybe I'll do better than some other people. But I did not expect at all to win.
NPR host Michelle Martin called your piece, quote, emotionally sophisticated, fair-minded, and exemplifying good journalistic values, adding, quote, you showed your openness and a willingness to be interested in other people's point of view. NPR host Felix Contreras said, quote, you know what I liked about He's Just 23 Chromosomes? The emotions are complicated, very, very complicated, and you navigated it so well. So that's some super high praise from respected radio journalists. Do you just kind of take it all in stride or does it still feel a little crazy?
No, even when you were reading that, my hands like started to sweat. It still feels so unreal to me. And like, what an amazing opportunity to hear actual feedback from people in the industry.
And don't you feel like your fellow grand prize winner and all those honorable mentions, that those people should all kind of get over the imposter syndrome and just accept that you're talented and people want to hear you?
Yeah, I hope that everyone else also gets the chance to actually gain some confidence and believe in themselves. And if this is something they want to pursue it, because that's the process I'm trying to go through now, too.
That's Anya Steinberg, a senior at Colorado College. We're going to talk more. But first, here is her grand prize winning story. I've bleeped the F-bombs, but we should still just warn that some sensitive listeners and children are advised to tune out for the next 8 minutes. Here it is with original music by Daniel Archibald, another Colorado College student. This is He's Just 23 Chromosomes by Anya Steinberg.
Hi, I'm Anya. And today I'm going to tell you the story of an immaculate conception. It didn't happen in the Bible. It happened on my mom's lunch break, in a sterile room. What my mom likes to say about it is this.
I f***ed a syringe, and then I had two kids.
Me and my younger brother, Ari, were products of artificial insemination. We're from the same donor, who my mom and dad picked out online.
There was only one Cairo Bank and all of Minnesota. We went to them and there were no Korean donors. I went back and called.
Why did you want a Korean donor specifically?
Well, because Dad was Korean.
You couldn't just have any old Asian.
No, we weren't going to have. No.
They ended up going through a cryobank in California, where they chose donor 3046. He was a medical student at Stanford, with good grades. Or so I thought.
And I swear to God, I thought we picked the doctor.
Last year was the first time I tried finding my sperm dad in the cryobank's database. I typed 3046 into the search bar and immediately had to call my mom.
And we picked the jazz musician. And then I remember when you guys said that to me, you and your brother, that we decided to go with the artist. It was like, well, you're an artist and you're Korean and he's an artist. That'd be cool.
The cryobank gives limited information that you can access for free. Reading through his files, my mind was spinning. My brain couldn't keep up with my eyes. I was like, 165 pounds, medium tan skin, born in Seoul, Korea. Plays trumpet. Outgoing. Dreams of directing a major motion picture. I was shook. I had this identity crisis. Like, who am I? My dad was supposed to be this straight-laced, studious guy, captivated by the intricate systems that make up the human body. And that made sense, because I liked systems too, just bigger ones. I was on track to become an ecologist. I was contemplating PhD programs and research conferences. But all of a sudden, I was like, my dad isn't a doctor. My dad is creative. It's in my genes to be creative. And maybe that's why I'm sitting here today, making this podcast instead of applying to grad school. Our parents got divorced when I was in third grade and Ari was in kindergarten. At this point, we didn't know we were sperm donor kids. We had a tumultuous relationship with our dad. He didn't always treat us well, like he wasn't the most stand-up guy. But to us, he was still our dad. So despite the hard times, we kept trying to make it work. And that's the way our dad wanted it.
I had this little file and I thought, oh gee, they'll become 21 and they'll have all these questions. And I thought, oh, I'll have the record. But then your dad burned all the records. It was super important to me that at some point we have to tell these kids. Now, your dad never wanted to. If he could keep it a secret from you guys forever, then you would forever love and adore him as dad, like all-encompassing dad.
Maybe our dad was right to want to keep the truth from us, because when our mom told us, something broke. When Ari found out about donor dad, he said he was relieved.
Like, my perception just changed from, you know, like, I felt like since I was his son, I owed him something. But, you know, finding out that you're not really related to this dude, I just felt like that was a relief off my shoulders because I could just be like, all right, f*** this guy. But, yeah, I just feel like it just, you know, gave me relief because it was kind of like my exit ticket.
Sometimes I wonder if, when the truth was revealed, our dad felt relieved too. The charade was up. The blood that was the bond that held us together dissolved. Ari and I started making excuses to ignore the custody schedule. And our dad started making excuses to skip our school conferences and orchestra concerts. Until one day we just didn't know each other anymore. Every other year or so now, he'll call on my birthday and leave a message.
I was calling to wish you a happy birthday. I called last night, but I didn't hear back from you. I'll call you here and I'm like, when I think you're out of school. Okay, bye.
I only call back sometimes. I'd like to say I'm the headstrong one. And that, eventually, I decided to be super fulfilled and independent without a father. But that's Ari.
I'm not looking for a dad in general.
You're not on the market for
dads?
No,
I'm not. It's not. The dad market is closed. Stocks are trending down. Because, you know, I got me, so that's all I really need.
Ari isn't even curious about who sperm dad is.
I'm not that into, like, finding out.
Why not?
Yeah, I'm not really looking for, like, a father figure and some random stranger that, you know, just nutted into a cup.
But I am obsessed. Sperm Dad is my glossy fantasy. Thinking about him, it's the kind of thing where I find myself melting holes in my ceiling with my eyes, just completely lost in my head. I imagine his voice would sound deep, oaky and reassuring. He wouldn't be like those serious Koreans. He would laugh and laugh, especially at what I said. He would teach me Korean and tell me all about why our family crossed the Pacific from Seoul to California. These sperm dad fantasies have a darker side, though. In all of the ways my dad failed me, sperm dad could too. And when that darker side creeps in, I feel... There's this Korean word, han. It has no direct translation in English. The best I can say about it is that it's this swirling mix of deep sorrow, resentment, grief, regret, and anger that some say lives inside every Korean. It's an echo of the traumas Koreans have experienced, from Japanese occupation to American imperialism and war. Apparently, it runs through our veins. It's written in the helixes of our DNA. Han has its tendrils wrapped around the Korean heart. Han is the only Korean word I know, which is fitting, because the only Koreanness I have lives in a man I've never met. Han is why I haven't called the cryobank yet, to see if I could reach out. I realize I don't even know if he's alive. And even if he is, it's possible the records are sealed, which means that if I wanted to meet him, I would tell the cryobank and then they would contact him and ask if he wanted to talk to me. If he said no, case closed. I would never get to know who he is. Which seems so unfair. I wish I could just run into him on the street and get in his face, like waving my hands around shouting, "Hey, here's what I am. Don't you want to know that I was Earth Club president in high school? Don't you want to know that I used to pee my pants a little bit every time I laughed? Don't you want to know that I've read Harry Potter 14 times? Like a father, I wonder if he could love me despite the fact that I could be a real know-it-all growing up. Despite the time when I was 8 and I got mad and kicked my brother in the face. I've cheated on a test. I drank underage. I'm a nervous driver and once I crashed my car and totaled it. I wonder if he could forgive me." My mom miscarried a child before me, a girl, and she miscarried my little brother's twin. Sperm Dad has lost two kids he didn't even know he had. I wonder if he would mourn too. I'm scared the answer to everything will be no, but for the sake of this story, I'm gonna be brave.
Thank you for calling California Cryobank, a Generate Life Sciences company. If you are a new or existing donor sperm client, press 1.
Thanks for listening. This podcast was written and produced by me, Anya Steinberg. Music was originally composed by my friend, Dan Archibald.
This is Local Motion on KVNF. You just heard the NPR Student Podcast Challenge College Edition grand prize winner. He's just 23 chromosomes by Anya Steinberg. You've left me, and I'm sure many other listeners, wanting more. Talk about that choice to end it how you did.
I think I ended it there because that's really where the story ends for now. I told it right up until the present moment, and I'm actually in the process of getting in contact with my sperm donor dad, so we'll see how that goes. I reached out to the cryobank, and they said that because his records are closed, I can't directly know who he is, but if he says that he's interested in talking to me, then maybe someday I will know. Yeah.
Was it scary to put yourself out there like this? I mean, knowing so many strangers, but also, of course, friends and family would hear this very personal story.
I actually didn't think about it at all.
Right. If you don't win, who will ever know?
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, when I was named a finalist and then when I won, people started actually listening to it. People in my class, my professor, who's my advisor, just a bunch of people that I didn't expect to hear such personal stories and also sometimes explicit information about my family. Yeah. So it's been something that on the back end, I've kind of had to be like, oh yeah, I actually did tell the entire world that, and now it's going to be not only something that everyone listens to, but is broadcast on the radio now.
Do you have advice for others who are looking at personal narrative, what you feel like you've learned from this in terms of what you can say, maybe what you don't want to say? Just for example, quoting other family members, right? I mean, so many novelists base characters on people in their life, and then there's sort of this interpretation game, but you don't get to hide this behind a pseudonym.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, with family members, I was really careful to not represent them in a way that they wouldn't be proud to be represented. And I think especially when you're interviewing people you love, you have to be empathetic and think about what they would want the world to think of them as. And then for myself, like, I just wanted to be as vulnerable as possible because I feel like I'm an open book and I like being real with people. And I knew that I'd written the right script when I read it and cried myself, which sounds kind of egotistical, but I just knew that that was when I was getting the emotions out that I wanted to get out.
Hey, yeah, you're a national champion now forever for life. So you get to be as egotistical as it takes. Tell us about how you found out that you won the contest.
Yeah. Well, I found out I was a finalist by email, and then I expected to hear back kind of like in the next week or so, and I didn't. So I figured, okay, I didn't win. That's okay. I'm fine with being a finalist.
Yeah, that's still awesome.
Yeah. And then I got a phone call one day from a number that I didn't know, but it was from Arlington, Virginia. And I was like, I don't really know anyone who lives there, so I should pick up maybe. and it turned out not to be a spam call, but someone at NPR telling me that I had won the contest, and I thought I was going to pee my pants right there. I was so shocked.
Not as shocking to folks who've heard the podcast, but yes.
Exactly.
And so then soon folks will hear your story all across the country.
I think it's all things considered. They will be playing it.
All things considered, including my life. So you graduate in a few months, and then what's next for you?
Great question. I'm not totally sure what's next for me. I'm right now planning on taking the summer to like work at a summer camp and have fun for once. And then after that, I'm hoping to get a job at a radio station or, yeah, anywhere journalism.
Anya Steinberg, senior at Colorado College, one of two grand prize winners of NPR's Student Podcast Challenge, College Edition. We'll link to her work at kvnf.org. I can't wait to hear what you do next. Thanks for joining me, Anya.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You're listening to Local Motion on KVNF. While we're on the subject of Colorado College, why not check in with friend of the show, Corey Hutchins, journalism instructor who writes one of my very favorite weekly newsletters, Colorado Local News and Media. Thanks for being back on KVNF, Corey.
Oh, thanks for having me, Gavin.
So Anya was in a class of yours, but you were not involved in the production of her championship podcast. Was that exciting to see one of your students recognized in this national platform?
Of course, it always is. Anya was a student of mine in an introduction to journalism class. And if I recall correctly, she had an assignment that she did for class published in the local Daily Gazette newspaper, like the first or second week of class. Students at Colorado College always impress me.
Not totally shocked then to see her win the big prize.
Of course not. No, I listened to that podcast, and you know, anybody who listens to that podcast, your listeners just did. It's hilarious. It's deeply emotional. It's got everything.
And like I said, you want to know what happens next, you know, and that's good radio. Well, you've also had some other students find success recently. Do you want to brag some more?
Oh, I'll brag about any student at Colorado College. If any of your listeners go to look at the campus publications that are coming out of CC, the Catalyst student newspaper is great. There's the CC COVID-19 reporting project, a twice weekly newsletter that covers how the pandemic is affecting the college and affecting higher education. Really just great journalism coming out of CC.
I was interviewed by one of your students this week for a class of yours called The Future and Sustainability of Local News. Can you talk about that project? What becomes of all my answers to his questions?
Oh, man, that's really great to hear. I'm glad the students are reaching out. So, yeah, the class is takes a look at, so Colorado College is 3.5 weeks. Students take only one class at a time. And so I have about 17 students right now, and we are studying the challenges facing the local news industry nationwide. And as you know, as somebody involved in the local media industry in Colorado, Colorado is a great place to look at this. A lot of the ills and challenges affecting the local news business are exacerbated here in Colorado. But of course, a lot of the potential solutions to what could possibly fix or mitigate our local news crisis are happening here as well. The students in this class are learning about that, of course, but they're also trying to do something about it. We're partnering with organizations like CoLab and the Colorado Media Project, which I'm involved, and they are having interviews like the one they did with a student did with you, with folks in the communities, not just people in the media scene, but, you know, community stakeholders all over the place about their community information needs, trying to understand the local news landscape in certain communities around the state, and trying to get a sense of what's out there beyond the traditional news sources that you and I might consider.
My guest is Corey Hutchins, Colorado College professor, the author of a fantastic newsletter that rounds up stories about Colorado local news and media. We'll link to it on our website, kvnf.org. Your April 9th edition leads off with the news that the Grand Junction Sentinel is retiring. It's 40-year-old printing press. I love your headline, "A Dinosaur Printing Press Goes Extinct." This is part of a nationwide trend, in fact. What did Sentinel publisher Jay Seaton say to his staff about this last week, and what happens next?
Well, I think it's one of those situations where it's clearly an impact of the disruption that has hit newspapers nationwide. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel serves the largest city between Salt Lake City and Denver. That printing press was built in, I think, the early 1980s, back when some folks believed Grand Junction was going to be the next big shale oil boomtown. It didn't happen. In fact, just, you know, the past few years, like a lot of newspapers around the country and in Colorado, of course, the pandemic didn't help. They're printing fewer papers and they're printing fewer days. As you know, that paper does not publish every day, not 7 days a week. And now we've actually seen that they have decided to retire the actual machine that prints the newspaper. I wasn't quite sure what that actually meant when I first heard about it. And it, after talking to some folks, it looks like this is kind of a part, it fits in with a broader trend. You know, papers with these older printing presses just not needing the capacity to print them at the capacity that they have to. That printing press can print 40,096 page papers in an hour, and they just don't need it. The publisher said to me, you know, Corey, that's like driving a semi truck to work when all you really need is a commuter car. So what that means is, and this fits with your listenership who are both in Grand Junction and in Montrose, the Montrose Daily Press owns its own printing press. I think it's more modern, might be smaller, a little more efficient, and they are going to be printing the papers for Grand Junction. That means that the papers will be printed in Montrose and then driven 70 miles north to Grand Junction and delivered there. Something else that I thought was kind of entertaining to consider when I was researching this story is that geography comes into play in Colorado. So they might have been able to, let's just say like a paper like Grand Junction wants to contract out with a new printer. They actually have to consider whether a printer is across a peak or a pass, a canyon, because if the weather shuts down a road for a couple days, they're going to have a problem. So Montrose is just nothing really in between that you would hope would shut down the roads. So that's where the paper is going to be printed now.
Well, I, for one, would love to visit a printing press museum. And I'm hoping that the Grand Junction Sentinel offers tours or something. If they do, can we go, Corey?
You know, yes, let's do that. We'll go have lunch out there. And I think we can actually see. So the publisher told me, I said, what are you going to do with that printing press? He said he could get about $40,000 worth of scrap from the metal, but it would cost just about as much to move it out of the three-story building it's in or something. So he said, I think we're just going to keep it. And he didn't use the word museum. I do believe that the first printing press for that paper from the 1800s is still there too, and that one will be right next to it. So it really will feel like a museum.
I want to ask you about what's going on in Front Range News. Your April 2nd newsletter led with diversity and inclusion concerns involving Nine News and the Denver Post. On April 9th, Tina Griego of CoLab hosted a community conversation with Polly Baca and Nita Gonzalez called Latinx Voices Past as Prologue. Tina said in a press release, the time is now to talk about, quote, a history of local news coverage that has dehumanized people, oversimplifying their lives to the point of caricature, the sinner, the saint, nothing in between, end quote. Talk about what happened at Nine News, please.
So what happened at Nine News is something that is happening in newsrooms all across the country and in newsrooms across Colorado. After this summer's racial reckoning, following the police killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis, newsrooms have been reckoning with their overwhelming whiteness and how that has affected their coverage, not just recent coverage, but coverage going back to the founding of some of these newspapers. You know, just today I had Alicia Bell, the director of Media 2070, which is a project from Free Press that is promoting the idea of reparations in media, come and talk to our class. Since this is a class about the future of the future and sustainability of local news, it's important to kind of take stock and look at what's going on here and what can and should be done. So what we've seen across the country and here in the state are newsrooms reckoning with their past, some putting out public apologies for the ways that they have covered communities. you asked me specifically about Nine News. Nine News reporter, former reporter named Lori Lizarraga, she penned a column in the alternative weekly Westword saying that she was felt forced out of the company, that she often ran into problems with her bosses there about things she maybe could or couldn't cover. So they kind of told her not to wear her hair the way she wanted to wear her hair. She said in her column that she was the third Latina to be kind of pushed out of that company. Started as it should have, a public conversation around that, and we are still seeing ripples from it today.
Do you think there's room for community pressure or input to help push newsrooms in a different direction? It seems like media so much controls the message. Where is the input from people outside the media? Newsrooms want to do more engagement-based reporting, and we want to audit our sources, and we want to figure out how to be more representative, but there's not necessarily a seat at the table for the public.
So I think there is, to an extent, and I think we're seeing it play out in Denver. Some public officials in Denver, the state and local office holders, certainly put out public statements. The National Association of Hispanic Journalists has gotten involved. They've wanted to ask to speak to leadership and management at the stations, and I think even the parent company Tegna that owns them. We've seen, and you know, if you really want to turn heads, unfortunately, it probably comes down to economics. And so we've seen a large investor in the parent company come out and make public statements. They're not happy with what's going on. We've also heard of potential boycotts. There is an issue that I just heard about the other day where a suburban Denver newspaper had a really insensitive April Fool's edition that was insensitive towards Asian Americans in the community. And I just noticed today that it looks like there's a kind of an engaged boycott effort going on there. So certainly you see the community react to this. And with social media the way it is, democratization of media these days, I think those, you know, kind of public awareness campaigns can spark a lot quicker than they probably would have in the past.
Before we go, talk about what happened with journalists at the Denver Post too.
So like other news organizations across the country and in Colorado that are grappling with their overwhelming whiteness and how that might affect coverage or apologizing for their past harm to certain communities, the Denver Post, journalists at the Denver Post wanted to issue a public letter through their newspaper about efforts that are taking root inside their newsroom to produce what they feel is better coverage in that regard. And they weren't allowed to do it. They wrote a letter through their union, their labor union, the Denver Newspaper Guild, recently, and said, we wish you could have seen it. Essentially said, we wish you could have seen this in the paper, but the hedge fund that owns them apparently didn't want them to do it. And so they produced a letter through their union that talked about the efforts that they were taking inside their newsroom to make sure that their coverage better represents the community of Denver.
That's Corey Hutchins, journalism instructor at Colorado College, owner of a hedge fund that operates many newspapers. No, not really. And author of the newsletter, Colorado Local News and Media. Thanks for so much for speaking with KVNF, Corey.
As always, thanks so much.
You've been listening to Local Motion on Mountain Grown Community Radio KVNF. Become a member today by donating at kvnf.org.